Thank you, and great pleasure to be here today. But apologies, I need to teach a class at MIT, so I'll be back later. But so for the discussion, Zhao Zhang, who's a postdoc at the lab, will. So I want to share just some of the work we've been doing on sensing at Sensible City Lab. I want to start with this project. A few years ago, we started getting interested in this computer. If you look at this computer today, you know everything about it, every chip in it, you know where it was produced, how it came together, how it became this machine. So we know everything about its supply chain, but we know very little about what happens to this or other pieces of e-waste when we throw them away. Sometimes this is what happens, a lot of e-waste from Europe being shipped illegally to Africa, from the United States to Asia. And so we started looking at the removal chain, not a supplying chain, but what you could call the removal chain. If you look at this, it's actually New York over 100 years ago, and it hasn't changed much today. It's still, you know, one of the most sophisticated waste management plants in this country today. And also we started looking at environmental justice issues as well. If you look at this map, it's interesting. It's about toxic waste and race across the United States. They almost overlap. This map is actually taking all the facilities from EPA and looking at recycling facility and landfills. It's quite interesting. It's not only the red and blue map. It looks a bit like red and blue map we were used to, but also it's about the high land value. So if you know, you're in a place with like a city with where the land is very expensive, you recycle more. If not, it's much easier to do a landfill, and you see that on the map. So we wanted to look at this, and we said, well, what if you could put little sensors on waste and start better understand what happens to waste? Now, we couldn't find anything off the shelf, so we had to design the little sensors. Those are almost like miniature cell phones. What they have to do, they need to last for a long time, so for many months. And then they need to simply get location. You want to get location not only with GPS. You need to do fingerprinting, because when you are in a truck, trash truck, sometimes you know, you don't get the signal. And then so we developed them with Qualcomm. We started deploying them. You need to protect them a little bit, otherwise some of them, you know, in trash, you know, get destroyed. And then did a few deployments with volunteers. What you see here is the first deployment we did in Seattle. We had around 500 volunteers, 3,000 pieces of trash. Put a little tag on all of them, as you see here. A lot of kids participated. You see some of the initial deployments with MIT students. This is a little video of the tagging process. We tagged anything from e-waste to banana peels. And after tagging all of them, we started following them. So here you see 3,000 traces the day of deployment in Seattle. After a few days, you see some of the main landfills next to Seattle. Actually, a big surprise how far some stuff started to travel. Sometimes in unpredictable ways. Look at the trace that went all the way to Chicago, changed its mind, and went back to California. And still moving after 1 month or 2 months. We thought the Farewell Symphony was over. So what did we learn from this? The first thing we learned is that you can get a lot of data, a lot of big data about not the supply chain, but call it the removal chain. And then we can use it to optimize this. And there's a few papers we've done where we looked at, you know, in some cases, we put more energy to move things around the country like this, you know, for thousands of miles. Sometimes, you know, here you see actually two cartridges going to the same place, but in totally different ways. So sometimes with more energy than what we will ever be able to recover. Or we've discovered places such as this one, that's actually a place where there should not be waste. And this location is, you know, it's a gravel extraction location, and we got a lot of tags there. Actually, we emailed them, they replied to us saying, I don't know what you're talking about. So I think clearly there's a problem there, you know, that's an EPA facility. So you can see what goes wrong and what doesn't go wrong. You can use this almost like in nuclear medicine, when you put tracer in our body and you follow it through the body, how we can do that at the scale of an entire city or the whole waste management system in a country. And again, you can look at different classes of waste and then, you know, how far they travel in what is the energy you get back and what is the energy you need to put to move them. The first thing is really how we can use all of this big data in order to streamline this in a similar way to what happened with the supply chain to do over the past few decades, to do the same today on the removal chain. The second thing that we thought was very interesting is that big data per se tells us a lot about the environment and about the consequences of what we do. So in the project, we were actually sharing all the data with volunteers. And then we did a few papers where we gave questionnaires to volunteers and tried to see, you know, did this change your behavior? It was interesting, actually, that it looks like it actually data per se had a quite powerful impact on people. I remember just anecdotally one lady who came to us and said, well, you know, I used to drink water in plastic bottles every day, and then throw away the bottles and forget about them. But now after the project, I know that those bottles go a few miles from home to a landfill. It will stay there forever. So I stopped drinking water in plastic bottles. So again, the idea that data per se, just by sharing it with people, can actually be a very powerful agent of change. The third thing we discovered is actually we saw that many tags would end up next to borders or in ports. And then the first deployment we did, we were tracking only in the United States. But then what we've been doing over the past 2 or 3 years is actually to probably the largest e-waste tracking project so far, together with an NGO that looks at toxic waste. And we discovered places such as this one in the middle of the jungle in Asia. If you go on our website, you see all the traces from the United States. Some of those traces are legal, some of them are not. But again, you know, the idea that tracking and big data can then help us better understand what happens on the global scale, and then hopefully to address some of these issues. In this case, for instance, maybe by putting pressure on politicians. The final thing we learned was simply totally unexpected. And that happened when a burglar came to our lab at MIT. And this poor guy stole a lot of things, including a lot of tags and computers that tell you where they go. And this is what happened. Right. Well, I just want to share this, you know, because I think, you know, if we today we can put sensors on waste, we can really use sensors everywhere in the city. And I want to share with you just on some of the other projects we're doing in Cambridge. We're putting sensors on garbage trucks. Actually, it turns out if you use this to monitor air quality, to monitor vibration and so on and so forth, just with a few garbage trucks, you can cover the whole city several times a week. We're using sensors into sewage. These are little robots we're developing with colleagues at CSAIL, at Computer Science at MIT. They go into sewage and then we use it to sample sewage to kind of measure viruses and bacteria in the city. Something you could call an urban microbiome, not the microbiome in our bodies, but the aggregated microbiome of the city. Or we're also using other type of analysis, in this case appropriating sensors such as Google Street View, and using AI, different type of, you know, either simple computer vision or AI algorithms. In this case, for instance, for something we call Treepedia, to monitor all the trees in Cambridge in that list, and really not only monitor them, but classify them, get them up, and again, share it with citizens so that people can then use this in order to look at their neighborhood and compare it with others. So I will stop here. As I said, unfortunately, I got class. I'll come back after class, but Zhao Zhang, who's been working a lot on Treepedia, can also be part of the discussion. Thank you.